Welcome to the boardroom, hosted by Russell Dinkins. This week's meeting is called to order.
Welcome to the boardroom meeting. This is your host, Russell Dinkins, and I'm in studio with Nicole Reeves. How are you today?
I'm doing well, Russell. How are you doing?
I'm all right. A little tiring today, though. You know, it's been one of those Tuesdays that feel like Tuesday.
It is Tuesday.
That feels like a Monday. As a matter of fact, today was trash day. I forgot to take the trash out. That's crazy. So age is catching up with me.
Mm-hmm.
So what we have today is that we have a very exciting show, very informative show. We have Jessica Milton on today, and Jessica Milton is... Wait a second. Why is my nose? Oh, here we go. Everything is all...
I don't know what you're doing.
I don't know. No one knows, right?
You need a do-over.
Yeah, basically. So Jessica Milton she's a graduate of Temple University in secondary education and teaching. Also, she has a master's of education from Cabrini University. She was assistant principal of Eastern University Academy Charter School in Allentown School District. And she was a principal at Belmont Charter School and Valley Day School. Now she's a supervisor of student and community services for a diverse school district, approximately 2 hours from Philadelphia. Jessica, welcome to the boardroom.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for having me. How are you today?
We're doing well. So let's get right into it. What made you pull up your roots and leave Philadelphia?
Well, personally, I was looking into... You just get into the time in your life you want to start family planning, and I was looking for a little bit of a slower pace. I lived in Philadelphia for over 20 years, and there's a lot of diversity in some of the little pockets outside of Philadelphia. It's affordable. You can get a lot of bang for your buck as far as housing, and you can still find some decent school districts, and there's also career opportunities for educators and education administrators. And also from an entrepreneurship standpoint, there's also windows of opportunity as well. So for me personally, mm-hmm. it just seemed like a great move for someone who really loves education, and especially being able to work with a student population that still has urban elements that still focus on the needs of especially Black and brown students in particular, but also that still has like that slower pace and that aligns with where I am in my journey in my life. So that's why I uprooted.
I don't know if I'm not offended. You just said everything outside of Philadelphia is beautiful.
and so is Philadelphia. Well, you know, sometimes in your life you just need a little bit of a shift. I've lived in Philadelphia for over 20 years, and I love the city, and I come back often. Mm-hmm.
Okay, way to make up with us. All right, so
don't try to change the narrative once now.
Well, you know, from a Philadelphia perspective, everything outside of Philadelphia does seem like rural America to us. Give us a snapshot of your school community and also its demographics.
Sure. So the district that I serve in, it's a smaller district comparing to the school district of Philadelphia. We have about 10,000 students, and it's 39% Black and Latino, 43% Caucasian, about 5% Asian, and the remainder other. So it's definitely a level of diversity. 43% of our district does receive free and reduced lunch. So our district spans about 28 miles. And so that's kind of how our district is set up.
Okay. All right. Okay. And Nicole, being a Trentonian, do you agree with Jessica's assessment of Philadelphia? And what do you what's your take on a smaller school district?
I was actually just saying to myself yesterday, I think I had enough. I don't want to come outside anymore out here in the city. I just want to go inside and it be nice and peaceful. So the fact that she found some place with a good school district and, you know, a slower pace, I'm with it.
Okay. Well, how many schools are in your district, Jessica?
We have 9 schools total. So we have 7 elementary schools, we have 1 middle school, and 1 high school. So even though our schools, we don't have many of them, they are very large. So our high school has about 3,300 students. Our middle school has around 2,500, and then our elementary schools splits up the remainder. So we don't have a lot of schools, however, they are very large.
Got it.
My school had about 3,500 students, but we were condensed down to 7 square miles.
Yeah.
So that's okay.
So that's like a little town within a borough, your school was. So what is your role at the district, Jessica?
So my role is the supervisor of student and community services. And so it's a little bit of a different name. Most school districts call the Department of Pupil Services. Mm-hmm. And pretty much what we do is we support the district in providing growth and development for the different groups that support students. So what that means is what falls under our department are nurses, counselors, school psychologists, transportation, homeless liaisons, paraprofessionals, child accounting. If a child needs a 504 plan, which is similar to, say, an IEP, but it would be more if there was a physical element or a health challenge that prevented the child from being able to get an education, expulsions and suspensions and mental health resources. So all of almost like the non-academic and curriculum things mm-hmm. fall underneath our department.
Okay. Speaking of your department, how many staff members do you have?
So we are a mighty team of 3. However,
oh, wow.
District-wide, yes. However, district-wide, we supervise over 60 staff members and over 10 systems.
So you have 10 systems, 60 staff members, and 3 people. Sounds to me you're working like 54-hour days?
Look, we divide, and you know what? It's a great team of people, and so you know, everybody, it's all hands on deck, and we all wear a lot of hats.
Got it. So, what are your department objectives? What is your goals?
So, some of the goals that we are focused on this year is just streamlining our mental health resources throughout the district, and just having a continued effort to make sure that there's a shared language and understanding around trauma-informed approaches to the work. And then also having sustainability of resources after, and we'll just call it COVID funding, after the COVID funding mm-hmm. dissolves. And so where there's, you know, just different funding that's coming during this time period, and there's a lot of, you know, resources and programs available, how are we able to have a level of sustainability mm-hmm. after that funding ends? Mm-hmm. And so how can we still, you know, allow those things to sustain? So those are our 3 pockets that we're focused on.
So speaking of, as far as the community as a whole, what are some of their challenges?
So some of the challenges that we're facing, employment is a huge challenge in the area, affordable housing. We have a large immigrant population, and so the challenges that come with having, you know, just a large immigrant population, especially with our Hispanic and Latino population, and then just a very transient population. So moving from the Philadelphia area to the New Jersey area to New York area. So we constantly are having that fluctuation of students moving in and out of our district.
So what services does the district offer, and how are they marketed or delivered?
So some of the supports that we offer, we really offer a wide range of services, from therapeutic services to healthcare services to housing, food, clothing. We have partnerships with community and schools, Family Connections, United Way, Boys and Girls Club, and we're not just limited to some of those community-based organizations. I'm just naming, you know, just a few. Mm-hmm. And how they are marketed and or delivered. So probably the most popular way is through our school-based referral system. And so if there's a student that is demonstrating a need, whether through our school counselors or through the student themselves, or either self-identified, so the parent might come to the school and say that they need some support. And so those are probably the two most popular ways. And then from there, also through our website, through parent meetings, through parent liaisons, if they're doing home visits, if we have back to school nights or mailers being mailed home. So there are a variety of ways, whether it's in person, through meetings, through our website, whether it's boots on the ground in multiple languages, the resources are being translated into, just to try to reach our student and family populations in as many ways as possible.
That's a lot. I don't remember all those resources when I was in school. How about you, Nicole?
No.
Okay.
A lot of schools don't even have a lot of those resources now.
Yeah, that's the truth. I mean, either we were less traumatized or we were just did not receive the help we needed. I definitely don't remember all that. I remember there was a breakfast program for the children that could not afford breakfast, and there was some sort of lunch, but no one really wanted to touch that. And then we had the usually guidance counselor that sits there and says, well, you're going to be a janitor and you're going to be a lawyer, you know, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. But I don't remember much more than that, Jessica. And so I guess, you know, the times have changed. You guys are really, really are in the help business.
And, you know, Russell, I think you make a really good point. And when that language of that more trauma-informed approach to the work, when I had mentioned that earlier as that being one of the focal points, and that dialogue around looking at what are the needs of the whole child and, you know, taking a more holistic approach to the work, that it's beyond just the, you know, curriculum component, mm-hmm. but how are we really educating the whole child? And they're not going to be able to perform as well on the academic end if there's maybe some things just on the mental health end or the family support end that might also need attention to as well. Mm-hmm. And so you are seeing, I think in this generation, more intentionality being paid to, you know, some of those needs.
By having such a diverse community, how do you design programs to reach all the people in the community?
And I think this is, and not just, you know, speaking to our district, and I'm not necessarily doing this interview on, this is not an interview on behalf of my school district. I'm really interviewing just as, you know, an educator speaking about my experiences, but I think across the board, this is something that all school districts, it can be an area of growth. But some of the ways certainly is understanding the needs of the students and understanding also what the different community organizations have to offer. And so that's always, you know, first and foremost. And so that's kind of the approach that, you know, we always want to take to the work. And would I say that's something that is done to perfection? You know, absolutely not. It's always a constant reflection of how can we, you know, do a better job at gathering data? How can we make sure that the programs that we're being offered are the best programs possible? How are we making sure that we are measuring effectiveness? How are we making sure that, you know, we are really reaching the needs of the students that we're serving? And it's that constant reflection of what are we providing? Are we doing the best services possible? Who else do we maybe need to find to be able to fill in the gaps? And so, but really going back to that base of how are we thoroughly assessing what are the needs of our student population, and then really being able to get out there in the community. And so, you know, like your big community stakeholders and providers and your more commercial ones, but then also being able to roll up your sleeves and finding some of those more grassroots organizations as well,
right,
that are, you know, some of those, you know, community groups that the founders, they were born and raised in the community, and mm-hmm. they still live in the community, and they live down the street, and they know so-and-so's, you know, children, and,
right,
you know, and really have those, you know, those community relationships. And so really kind of knowing who some of those groups are as well, and being able to form those partnerships where they might not have the level of advertising that maybe some of the larger groups have. So it's finding the balance between some of the more mainstream groups, but then also some of those more grassroots foundations as well.
Well, is it a misconception that the children in more affluent areas need fewer social programs?
So personally, and I can only answer from, you know, my perspective, I would say that is not a misconception. However, though, where I would say the misconception lies is that they don't need any support. And so oftentimes there is a mentality that, well, they have mom and dad at home, or, you know, they're going to be okay. And so as if there shouldn't be any access to resources. But oftentimes, you know, people that are in a certain income bracket, they don't qualify for maybe certain subsidies or support. So everything is out of, you know, their pocket that they have to pay. So when they do come upon financial hardship, there's very little support for them out there. So they should be able to have access to, you know, some type of health supports or community programs, right, and know how to, you know, be able to tap into those resources. However, though, should they maybe have the same level of programming for, say, you know, a student that, you know, really is from a much more impoverished background, you know, and that's where, you know, as far as with, you know, the misconception, I'm not going to say that it's a misconception, but it doesn't mean that just because they're in a certain income bracket that everybody needs help and support or can fall upon hard times. So they should definitely be able to have resources available to help them through some of those rough patches.
Yes, ma'am. So what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break here. And when we when we come back, we'll have more Jessica Milson. Stay tuned.
We will be right back.
Damon John said that entrepreneurism is a team sport. Indeed, it is. We believe that business owners should work together to give back. That's why we've aligned with the gamification of fundraising to support our veterans. Visit www.fundduel.com/servevets and take our challenge. Business owners, employees, and customers all working as a team to raise money to help veterans with the three biggest problems they face: employment, housing, and mental health. Our veterans have sacrificed to protect us all. It's time to support them. All proceeds will be forwarded to the Jacobs Ladder Development Center. Visit fundduel.com/servevets.
Do you wake up feeling stiff or exhausted? Your mattress could be the reason. Sleep is an essential need, so trust it to a professional. professional. I'm Vic Petalano, owner and registered sleep advisor at Mattress Outlet of Abington. You and your loved ones deserve max comfort for minimum cost with zero stress. So schedule your free sleep consultation at www.matlet.com and get a free gift just for visiting. Or simply call me at 215-307-1535. Let's solve your bedding problem today.
Is your roof leaking? Are your pipes leaking? Hopefully you don't have any fire damage or smoke damage from a fire close to your home or your business. Do you have insurance? If so, Eastern Adjustment Group knows how to make sure insurance companies pay everything you're supposed to have. Don't hesitate to call 215-604-1595. We know how these policies work. We know what to say. We know what not to say. We speak the language. Eastern Adjustment Group will get you paid. 215-604-1595.
Attention entrepreneurs. We've built you a network to solve the three biggest problems that you face. Welcome to Automatch Alliance. And that is, of course, networking. After all, entrepreneurism is a team sport. Secondly, lead generation. They do go together, and we do that via software that finds you targeted leads. And thirdly, quality matching members to members via our sophisticated algorithm. And then we add in our exclusive community, which is like Facebook on steroids, and this creates true collaboration. Our promise to you is to provide the most time and cost-effective network on the planet or your money back. Visit us at automatch.network. Register today.
You are listening to The Boardroom Meeting with host Russell Dinkins.
And we are back. Back in studio with Nicole Reeves. And online here we have Jessica Milton. And Jessica Milton is calling from an undisclosed school district in Pennsylvania. It's almost like you're in witness protection,
witness
right?
Protection.
Yeah, she's tucked away for her own safety. And
oh, my goodness.
And I'm going to run through some of these questions very quickly because we're almost out of time.
It
Jessica,
good.
As
it
far as...
Good.
As far as parental participation, it's always been something that's been a hot topic. And it seems like as soon as the kids are able to get on the bus by themselves or independently walk to school, they seem to be on their own. Do you think that parents are taking the training wheels off the parental guidance too soon?
Well, definitely everything does start at home. However, it's about a balance of the school being of support, having support from the home and support from the community. When mm-hmm. you historically look at how children were raised, it was never that they were raised in silos. It was community support. It was support from the school. It was support from the home. So this concept that the raising of children is all on one entity, it never was really set up that way when you look across various cultures, across various societies.
Good.
So it's all about a balance.
Great. So let's go to the next quick question. How important is mentorship?
Mentorship is priceless. Any age should have mentorship, and it's never too young to start it. Students should have mentorship starting in elementary school, hands down.
Got it. And you gave me some stats earlier in the week about your postgraduate students. So give us an idea, where do they go from your school district?
So 40% of our students do go on to four-year colleges. 43% of our students go on to two-year colleges. And a lot of that is we have vo-tech schools that our students are able to attend while they're in high school. So a lot of them will matriculate right into the local community colleges right from the vo-tech school or do some form of a dual enrollment while they're in high school. So the numbers are pretty high for them being able to have a two-year college degree. 1.3% go on to the military and 15.7% will go into the workforce.
Got it. Elevator pitch, 30 seconds. Tell me what you'd like your district to look like in the next 36 months.
In the next 36 months, just having an increased focus on trauma-informed approaches to the work, having increased access for resources to families, and maintaining of programs post-COVID.
That's perfect,
I feel like
Jessica. You nailed it. You nailed it. Thank you so much for being on the boardroom. We really enjoyed you. And
I appreciate you all having me.
And we look forward to seeing you on the boardroom again. And Nicole,
mm-hmm.
a little bit of post. What are your thoughts on Jessica Milton?
You know, I'm excited that they're taking so much care with their families, with their children and their families, because 10 or 15 years ago, you couldn't get mental health services paid for by your health, some health insurance plans for children.
Right.
So the fact that you guys are even addressing those needs is just great.
And hopefully that type of energy will trickle down here to Philadelphia. Thank you for being on the board, everyone. We'll see you next Tuesday at 4.
The boardroom meeting has been adjourned. Please join us again next Tuesday at 4 p.m.